The Public News Service Daily Newscast, February the 26th, 2021. I'm Mike Clifford. With the Senate considering President Joe Biden's massive infrastructure plan, a new study finds West Virginia stands to gain thousands of living wage jobs if the federal government invests in some of the plan's key projects.
Bankrolling broadband expansion, clean energy, and a more sustainable transportation system would bring more than 41,000 jobs to the Mountain State, according to study lead author Robert Polin. Based on federal government statistics, he says the jobs should be union level with good wages, conditions, and pensions.
These will be jobs across the board. A lot of jobs in construction, but also jobs in sales, management, production, engineering, office support, chemists, farmers, community service managers across the board.
He estimates the job creation would need about a $2 billion government investment along with private funding. He urges lawmakers to back Biden's Build Back Better infrastructure plan, which, based on West Virginia's population, he says would bring in more than $2 billion in funds needed. I'm Diane Bernard.
Meantime, the House passed sweeping legislation Thursday to ban discrimination against people based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Politico reports it delivers a major victory to the LGBTQ community while exposing an ugly rift in the GOP. The Equality Act, which would amend the 1964 Civil Rights Act to provide protections for gay individuals, garnered unanimous support from House Democrats on its way to approval. The vote was 224 to 206. Politico notes that three Republicans crossed party lines to join Democrats to endorse the bill, but that is less than half the number of GOP votes the measure got the last time it came to the floor. President Biden has charged top White House officials with ensuring that communities living in the shadows of the nation's power plants, highways, and refineries receive at least 40% of benefits from new investments in clean energy, public transit, affordable housing, and pollution controls.
Michelle Roberts with the Environmental Justice Health Alliance for Chemical Policy Reform says redlined neighborhoods in Nebraska and across the U.S. should be at the front of the line.
We need to prioritize those communities in such a way that we provide remedy and redress and make these communities whole.
In the 1930s and 40s, the Federal Homeowners Loan Corporation drew maps of U.S. cities, including Lincoln and Omaha, outlining in red where people of color lived. White neighborhoods received federal funding and benefited with amenities, including better schools. Redlined areas were the only parts of cities where Black and Latino families could live. I'm Eric Galatis.
This is PNS. A measure in the state legislature would remove protections from a wilderness study area in southwestern Montana. Eric Tadoff tells us opponents see it as an effort to repeal other study areas in a top-down manner.
Senate Joint Resolution 7 would remove Hidden Pasture Creek's study area designation. The designations are aimed at determining if the areas have wilderness characteristics. Jack Kirkley is a professor of biology at the University of Montana Western, who notes he's not speaking on behalf of the school. He agrees that it's time to resolve the issue of these study areas, but says passing resolutions in the legislature is not the right way.
Simply saying, here's our resolution to take it away and not have any further study or consideration of it is sort of shortcutting the input by citizens.
A report from the legislature's Environmental Quality Council last year determined a collaboration among many stakeholders was the best way to approach Montana's study areas.
In Idaho, the smallest businesses are struggling to weather the pandemic. Jonathan Amisa owns Sky Road Medical Transport in Boise, which provides non-medical emergency moves to places such as doctor appointments. He says COVID-19 slowed down his business to the point where he's had to let some employees go.
They're like family to me. We pretty much tell each other everything. We support each other, and I have to let them go. It's so painful, and mentally it kind of haunts me, and it's still haunting me right now.
On the plus side, Amisa says he has been able to get financial assistance from federal government relief programs, a Boise City grant, and from the organization Economic Opportunity by Janus. Finally, Mike Moen tells us the reliability of clean energy thrust back into the spotlight following recent power failures in southern states.
The extreme cold that gripped the central U.S. in mid-February led to massive outages in places like Texas and Oklahoma. That prompted politicians opposed to renewable energy to claim that frozen wind turbines were to blame. But electrical grid experts say the lack of weatherization of fossil fuel plants was a key factor. Carrie Johansson of the Iowa Environmental Council says in this region, wind energy has been dependable in cold weather.
We did not have problems with icing or turbines shutting down because of the weather, because the turbines are prepared for that.
Johansson says the reliability is crucial because wind now accounts for more than 40% of Iowa's electricity. Other supporters, like the Environmental Defense Action Fund, say grid capacity needs more investment.
That same poll found broad support, including 78% for both independents and Republicans, for increasing energy storage capabilities. This is Mike Clifford, and thank you for wrapping up your week with Public News Service. Member and listener supported, heard on great radio stations across the nation and online at publicnewsservice.org.